tough day.
Where am I?
You're dead.
But you have skills that we want.
So we'd like you to join the RIPD, Rest in Peace Department. Your job is catching deados,
the bad souls that escape judgment.
Meet your new partner.
Now, you gotta earn that. Come on. We are the greatest lawmen that ever lived and died. Now, some souls hide out among the living. I don't know what else to shoot you between. There's something else. You don't look like you. You don't sound like you anymore.
So what do I look like? Really? An old Chinese guy? What about you?
If the dead take over, that's it for the living world.
They picked the wrong venue to make a stand. This world's for the living, and RIPD is going to keep it that way.
And welcome back to the Film Reel Cast. We have a banger of a show this week. I'm joined by Neil. Neil, how are you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm very well, Stu. Good to be back to speak to you. And what a doozy we have today.
I know. We was going to do Terminator 3, but we've decided we've put that on hold due to recording schedule clashes. But we've come up with something completely out of the blue because we wanted to give you something to listen to. And right or wrong, we've chosen RIPD 2013, film starring Jeff Bridges and Ryan Reynolds.
What a cast, though. It's, just to get off the back, what a cast it is.
It's incredible. Yeah, just wanted to show you something. We wanted to talk about something that's really divisive. And I thought it was a kind of, because I haven't seen it for ages, like a love or hate, but it appears just hate. And as you say... The cast is pre-Deadpool. Ryan Reynolds plays Nick. Jeff Bridges plays Roy. Mary Louise Parker plays Proctor. You've got Kevin Bacon, the baddie, as always, plays Hayes. Stephanie Sostak plays Julia. James Hong plays Nick's avatar. And the lovely Marissa Miller plays Roy's avatar. And everyone else is just by the by. But... It's a mental film. It really, really is. As I say, I've not seen it for a long time. And the storyline is basically watch Men in Black, watch Ghostbusters, mix them kind of together, and you've got RIPD. And for those who haven't seen it, it stands for Rest in Peace Department, which we'll come to why later on. But yeah, as you were saying just before we got on air, the budget for this, it was astounding.
I know. Crazy, isn't it? Estimated between 130 and 154 million.
Exactly. And that's just the filming. And when you look at, because it bombed so badly in America when it first came out, and the opening weekend in USA and Canada, and 12 million off the back of, as you say, 130 million. So they pushed promotion for the worldwide, for Asia and for Europe when it was released. And they reckon the budget's more close to 170 million, and they lost. It's one of the biggest losses, of top 10 of all time, this film. It's incredible.
Then it grossed around 78 million or something like that worldwide in the end. It was just
shocking.
Horrendous.
And I looked at the interviews. I went on YouTube, and because I always like to, when we do the different films, go behind the scenes, see what you can see. And it's quite nice in hindsight. And when you looked at these films, and both Ryan Reynolds and Jeff Bridges were being interviewed, that they were really hoping, and I think it was Warner Brothers as well who'd done this, I'm pretty sure it is.
It's Universal, isn't it?
Universal were hoping that this would launch a massive franchise. And in the interviews, they both talk about a franchise, how well they got on set, and how positive everyone was that this could be a franchise. And it's amazing in hindsight just how much this has bombed.
Well, you watch it now and it's dated quite badly, CGI wise and stuff like that, and you kind of get where they're going with it and the story, and it's quite clever in a way, but it doesn't grasp you. Or it certainly didn't me. By the time I finished it, I wasn't thinking, God, I really hope there's a second one. I wasn't aching for more. Let's put it that way.
No, and I think it's ironic in 2013 when it came out, you had Iron Man 3, which obviously Jeff Bridges was Obadiah Stane, who was amazing in that. Mm-hmm. It just on the back of just such a load of trash. And but you've got some really good actors in it. Kevin Bacon has done Stir of Echoes, obviously Footloose, Invisible Man, just so many. And when you think Ryan Reynolds, the Green Lantern, an absolute failure, and it was Wade Wilson in the X-Men universe as well before he was that in Deadpool. And it's really only Jeff Bridges who has got just such a massive catalogue of really, really good films as well. He's done some amazing films.
Oh, he has. That
for him to kind of end up like this, it's just quite sad, isn't it? And there's so many reasons why this is bad. And I think equally, there's so many reasons why this could have been just such a really good film. It was so close, I think, to be in the franchise that they wanted it to be.
It could have been. I think it ended up a bit too, I don't know, maybe too slapstick. It was just, I don't know, they sort of lost their way. But I'm just looking through old Ryan's credits around that time.
Mm.
And he didn't do a lot of good back then, did he? Let's be fair.
No.
I'm just looking, I mean, in 2016, fair enough, he redeemed himself massively with Deadpool. But prior to that,
yeah, it was a lot of voice over work.
Never heard of it. Woman in Gold, never heard of it. The Captive. He was credited in a couple of things as well. Turbo, he was a voice in that.
Turbo's a good film, but that's...
It's an all right, but, you know, you wouldn't...
But it's... Yeah, she said it's not him. And again, it's Turbo's good, The Croods is good, but there's just voice over work. It's not him. Green Lantern, as we all know. Oh, wow.
Awful.
How much... That really, really bombed. It's amazing how popular he is now.
Yeah.
Now, to looking back to just how bad it was, and that's one of the reasons why his marriage split up. I think he was married to Scarlett Johansson at one point, or he's with her.
Bastard.
Yeah, and her career was taken off with the MCU, and whilst his career was completely bombing, and pride-wise, that must have really hurt him. But even with the stuff he's done, like Six Underground, which was a Netflix massive release. It was one of their own films. It's full of action, non-stop, but it lacks storyline as it much as it does give you action.
That's the problem, isn't it? You can put as much action in a film as you want, but if it's got nothing there to actually keep you there, let's liken it to Shoot 'Em Up. That film is full of action,
but
the storyline is pretty poor, really. You like it for what it is. I know you and the boys liked it. But if you took it on face value of the story, it was pretty pants.
Yeah.
So, you know, hence why it didn't do very well. So you're right.
I completely agree. It's a real shame. It's kind of like the Nearly Man, isn't he? And when you look at the director of this, Robert Schauswekel, where his bloody name is, got such a dopey bloody name. It's annoying anyway.
Robert Schwechter.
He kind of did action. He can do action, which he's proved in the Red action films. But again, when you look at Flight Plan was a good film. He's done some good films, but he doesn't come with a massive back catalogue of guaranteed successes when it comes to films like this.
Certainly not. Just looking at it now, there's nothing there apart from, like you say, Red, maybe, that really...
Yeah, Red 1 and 2, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and the films like the Divergent series, Insurgent, that kind of bombed as well. So he's not done a great deal of work that would give you a lot of faith, and especially to put such a massive budget into this, to back him on such a massive project of a franchise which they were hoping to launch, was just never ever going to work. But and you know, when you go through, say, like, I don't know, Goodfellas, even like the Terminator ones, which you do when you do your research, and when you go on to IMDb and you look at like the trivia, the goofs and stuff like that, it was amazing that there was about 10-12 bits of trivia on this. It's as if the film was that bad people just couldn't be asked to list any trivia.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll have to be honest, even in 2013, I do not remember this being released.
Really?
No. I didn't. Was it straight to DVD, or was it out in the cinema? It must have been out in the cinema to gross what it did. I stumbled across this probably about 6 months ago on Sky, and I watched it, And I just thought, well, that's an hour and a half I'm not going to get back.
That's it. Yeah, I watched it. I didn't see it at the cinema, but I did watch it at home.
Yeah.
And I did have really high hopes for it. I like Jeff Bridges. And the it's definitely one of those things that the trailers look good.
Mm.
And they show you the best bits. And it fools you completely. And so many films have done that.
It's a new thing. Half the trailers these days, you can watch that and you don't have to watch the film, do you?
Mm.
Because they've shown you the storyline and everything else. But I love Jeff. Jeff is just so cool as an actor. He really is. I bloody love him.
Yeah.
I could watch him all day, like The Big Lebowski. What a film that is. That goes nowhere, that film, but you could just watch him all day.
Yeah.
It's such a good actor. He's just so good. And that's why it's such a shame about this one. You know, like you said, Iron Man and Tron Legacy and just all these different, there's loads of films, but I love Jeff. I think he's absolutely fucking brilliant actor.
Yeah, it's just his film choices that, and it's interesting because coming off the back of the Lethal Weapon series that we've done, which is available on iTunes, Android, YouTube, everywhere, the Film Reel cast, we've spoken about the importance of cop buddy films and the connection that naturally flows between both of them. And a lot of the time, it felt as if Ryan Reynolds just was bored. It wasn't that energy that he's got when he's in Deadpool. And even when he's kind of briefly in the Fast and the Furious series, and it just, he doesn't have that energy here. He looks pissed off. It's like a paycheck. And I don't know whether he kind of signed up for it, then halfway through realised that this is an absolutely terrible film, but I've kind of committed to it. But it's a real shame because he can hold a film which he's proved on his own.
He can, but I think maybe this was going through that time. You know, lots of actors do it. Nicolas Cage has done it. They just cling to things to hope it'll be the next best thing to relaunch their career. You know, Kevin Bacon's the same. He's done some good stuff previously, but then he goes for a patch where you don't see him ever, do you? He just disappears. And then he comes back and does something and it's woeful. And then he ends up as, you know, advertising EE.
I know, it's so true. But the strange thing I always think about Kevin Bacon is that he's always so familiar and he's someone you just know and you like, and you think, man, he's a really, really good actor. I like Kevin Bacon. I like having him on the screen. He gets my interest. But when you go through a lot of the things he's done, you just don't recognize them. You can't remember him as being any good. And he's only got, I mean, Mystic River, just incredible. I mean, Hollow Man, really, really good. Stir of Echoes, Wild Things, for many reasons.
Tremors.
Sleepers, Tremors, Apollo 13. He's done The River Wild, with Meryl Streep. He's done some good films, and The Following, which is a TV series, season one, out of this world. Rest of it, forget about. But he's done good things, but he's done a lot of terrible things. He's got that charisma that he can just get away with it. He can wear it really well and he can carry on, whether it's just so thick skinned, but he's so good at being a baddie. 9 times out of 10, when he's in something, you just know he's a baddie.
Oh, he's always going to be the bad guy, isn't he? The first thing I remember ever seeing him in is Friday the 13th. And that's the first time I remember him being in it.
Wow.
But, you know, and then the second thing I probably can really sticks in my mind is, you know, the Invisible Man. It was just brilliant.
Was he really in Friday the 13th, was he?
Yeah, he was. He was Jack.
Blimey.
Friday the 13th. One of the guys that was trying to set up the camp at Camp Crystal Lake and stuff like that. So, yeah, he was in that. First ever one.
Didn't know that whatsoever. Yeah. Did he live? Did he die?
He dies in the end. I'm sure everyone does, don't they? I think only the girl survives in the end. I think he buys it.
That's it. But smoke, drink, have sex, you're dead. That is it.
Basically, as soon as you have sex or get your boobs out on Friday the 13th, you're dead. That's the premise. So keep the tops on, ladies.
You said earlier that this is 13 years after Men in Black.
Yeah.
Like the original Men in Black, which, I mean, those films are okay. I can't watch them now. But and this is just nowhere near as good as it. And it shows how bad it is that it's still trying to get to what Men in Black had, and it fails.
That's the thing. I mean, you know, that was Will was big back then as well, wasn't he? And he made that film. He did make that film because he was huge. Everyone wanted to see him, and it was a fairly good story, and it was funny because it was a bit slapstick and alien-y stuff. But yeah, this just doesn't touch it. You're right. And Ghostbusters, like you say, you're never going to beat Ghostbusters. So trying to put the two together with Jeff, as much as I love him, with his terrible cowboy accent.
Yeah. Ryan, and they did try and tick those boxes. Jeff was Tommy Lee Jones. Ryan was Will Smith. And it's they went through the kind of different ingredients which made Men in Black so good. And I don't know if it failed because the script, I mean, the story is quite a generic story, isn't it? That's been done loads of times. There's a wormhole. You need to close the wormhole down. I mean, even they did it in Avengers.
Yes, they did.
So, I mean, everyone's had a go at doing this.
It's a staple line, isn't it? Wormhole, aliens, bad guys, good guys, stop bad guys,
So, but I kind of, when I was watching it, because I watched it today again, and I watched it yesterday as well. And when I was watching it today, I was just trying to get in the mindset that this is for children. It is a 12, and how do kind of kids react to this? And
I don't know.
Is it something that they'd be interested in? I even asked my 11-year-old, let's do an experiment. Let's sit down and let's watch this together and I'll gauge your reaction to see if it's any good. No, you're right, Dad. Don't worry about it.
He probably looked at it and goes, all right, mate. I'd rather not. Thanks. Yeah. I love that.
He looked at it and like, what's this about? And I told him, he goes, no, you're all right. There you go. This is why I only made 70 million.
Oh, dear. That's shocking, isn't it? That is shocking.
Yeah, that did make me laugh. But, I mean, this film starts. I mean, to fair play, I'm not going to smash this film completely.
No.
As we've already said, it does have its good bits. And the action is aplenty in this. Mm. And it is good, fun action. And it starts off with someone with a similar physique to me being chased down the road by Ryan Reynolds and Jeff Bridges. And you get narration by Reynolds, and you instantly know that he does die. They make no secret of that. This was me 3 or 4 days ago when I didn't know this world existed, and that's what he says. So you know something's going to happen, and there is so much foreshadowing in this film. It's incredible, isn't it?
Oh, God, dear. It tells you. You pretty much know what's going on from the start, don't you? It's there's no guessing in this.
No, it's like breaking the fourth wall, but without intentionally doing it. The amount of foreshadow sometimes they actually do put on this. But when they say, you always know 3 or 4 days ago when that starts and he's already set it up. But he's burying something in like some gold. And I must admit, when I first watched this, I couldn't really remember what it was about. I was expecting absolute trash and horror, but I just thought, is he a dirty cop? Is that what it was about? And I didn't remember it, but he's not really a dirty cop in this, is he?
What always makes me laugh is, why do people bury stuff in their back garden at night, where people would look out their window and go, why is that guy burying stuff at night? Whereas if you did it during the day, people wouldn't bat an eyelid.
No.
It always bothers me.
It's so strange, isn't it?
Be normal about it. But there you go.
But yeah, so he plays a cop, and he's partnered up with Kevin Bacon. And they kind of do, as I say, they go through the motions here. They do tick the boxes with regards to what you need, the magical ingredients. And you see Reynolds' girlfriend, Julia, by Stephanie Sosnack. And she's a really nice actress. She's just very, very easygoing, isn't she?
Very sweet girl, wasn't she? She's very good.
And they tick the box for a very loving relationship. And this is what I think the one-liners and this kind of mushy stuff is what Ryan Reynolds is really, really good at.
Oh, yeah. Well, the women love him, don't they? And
guys
want to be him and women want to be with him. And he says the fatal line of, I'm yours forever. And you're like, well, you're definitely going to die then, aren't you? Because you already set yourself up.
Yeah, that's the magical words.
Yeah.
And there is, because there is a film which I've seen with the missus quite a few times, and I think it's called The Proposal that he's in. And it's where he marries, or he goes off, and he takes like this Sandra Bullock, who's like his boss, who's a real bitch, and she's going to get extradited. Yeah, so they have to do like a marriage just for the side of the paperwork, so she can stay in the country. And again, they fall in love. And that's a really, really nice film. And it's a good film, and they're both really good characters in it. And it reminded me of this, because he's good at doing the kind of puppy-eyed romantic guy, and he does it really well.
Yeah. No, definitely. I've not seen it, because it's not my kind of film. But,
yeah.
Yeah, he's
been on TV a few times. Really, really, it's a nice kind of rom-com film, if you like that.
Yeah.
And you then go to the police department, and you see Kevin Bacon, and you instantly know that Kevin Bacon is going to be a bad guy, don't you?
Oh, of course he is. He's talking about wherever you put yours and stuff like that. And so he's obviously in on it as well. And yeah, he's just cocky, isn't he?
Yeah,
just typical exactly. Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, basically. You learn that they've both got the gold, and they've both hidden the gold. And that, as you said, they're planning, what can they do? But it's more at the moment, it seems, the conscience for Kevin Bacon to make sure that Ryan Reynolds isn't going to crumble, isn't going to grasp and get him in trouble. He's only wanting to get out of this himself. And you see with regards to kind of the character arc forming for Ryan Reynolds is that because he's in love, because he's in a good relationship, he doesn't want to keep that gold.
No.
And he's regretting it, but he's saying he's not going to grasp Bacon up. And as soon as he says he's not going to grasp Kevin Bacon up, you instantly know that something's going to happen to him.
I'm out. You're out. Look, nothing has to change for you. You do whatever you want, but I'm putting mine in evidence. It's done.
Nicky, I said I wouldn't move it first. I'll take care of everything.
That's not what I'm talking about, Bobby. I'm talking about the way she looked at me this morning. I knew.
Look, we went in there to make a drug bust, which we did. We didn't expect this gold to fall into our laps. We weren't looking for it, but it happened. The way I see it, you do it for Julia.
Oh, definitely, because yeah, he's petrified, isn't he? He doesn't want to lose his missus, but he's obviously trying to have his nest egg and all this sort of stuff. But Kev is obsessed with it, and he's going to do everything he can, isn't he, to get his hands on it and make sure he doesn't get himself in trouble. It's the stereotype.
It is. It's as you say that they tick this in so many films, and conveniently, when you think as an audience, oh, here we go, something's going to happen to him, they go instantly, someone runs in and goes, Graza, who you've been after all this time, it's suddenly been cornered.
Oh, yeah.
And you never, ever see this kind of infamous baddie who they're always after. But you know, as an audience, because they basically stop and look at the camera, that this is where it's going to go wrong. And because we're a stupid audience, which they naturally assume, whilst they're convoying on the way there, he's talking on the radio, and he even says, from Bobby Hayes, don't get shot today.
Not going to go easy. Now, stand by for inspiring, motivating words from Detective Bobby Hayes. How about we don't get shot today? Well, that's great advice. You're a good cop. Detective Hayes advises we should avoid getting shot, and also everybody should put their charm bracelets on now.
Hey, that's my grandmother's say, Christopher Metal Jackass.
It's adorable.
And wear for protection.
That's a protection. Well, this stops bullets. Here stops you.
No one gets shot, and it's terrible. It really is terrible.
It is bad.
And they highlight the bracelet that and it's the only thing in focus on the screen is the bracelet that Kevin Bacon's wearing, the good luck charm, which he says is a St. Christopher, and they both laugh about it. And it's just corny. It's terrible writing, and for me, I hate it when they shove stuff down your throat. And I know it's for a 12-year-old audience, and they're hoping that they can pick it up, 12 to 15, 16 maybe, and they need to understand it. So it's one of those things where I think you need to cut it some slack to a certain degree, or do you not think so?
No, yeah, I think you do, because like you say, it is aimed towards that young generation. But I'm not being funny. Young people aren't stupid either. And they will enjoy a film for what it is. And most of the time, they don't care if the dots connect together. they just want to enjoy a fun, funny action film that's got cool effects and stuff like that.
That is so, so true. That is so well said. I couldn't agree more.
And
I think they couldn't give a toss, could they?
They don't care, mate. They do not care. It's like fucking Pokemon or whatever. They don't give a shit where they come from. They just want to know what powers it does. You know, it's just how it is. Some that are diehard fans as they get older might want to look more into it. But when you're watching a film, they don't give a shit. They really don't. But there you go. I don't know. It just tries too hard in so many elements to really push home what it's all about. But like you say, you've got to try and give it some slack, haven't you, really? Because it is just supposed to be a fun action film about dead people.
But as you say, they wouldn't give a toss if they were shot. They wouldn't care. There's explosions. There's people being blown up. There's no blood or anything like that. They do it really, really well. Oh, and the action is good. Mm. And it's when they get to the top of the warehouse, when he thinks he's after this imaginary baddie. I mean, what's your thoughts with regards to this baddie? Do you think there was a baddie there? Do you think it was set up? I mean, with regards to this happened so Ryan Reynolds could be shot, because you don't actually see this infamous baddie at all, even though he's meant to be in this tiny warehouse, which is completely surrounded.
I guess there is, but because you don't know who it is before he even goes in there, all of a sudden they're just running off to get this bad guy. So you've got no background on it, have you? So you don't know who he is. And so, I reckon there probably was, to get all those cops there. And he's just taken the opportunity to top him off, so to speak.
Yeah, it's strange. And what I like is that this film, to its credit, does move really, really fast.
Oh, yeah.
And Kevin Bacon's there. And he kind of double-crosses Ryan Reynolds and he shoots him. Again, there's no blood.
Jesus! Oh, that was close.
The hell are you doing?
You almost got me. But I can't let you turn that gold in.
What?
And Ryan Reynolds falls off the balcony, and it's quite a comical fall of several stories because the special effects are so bad. The way he lands is really, it's kind of special effects, stop motion, a mixture between. It's quite messy, but not in an intentional way, is it?
Yeah, because when he hit his head on that sort of railing or whatever, I thought, fucking hell, that's quite hard for, if it's for a kids film, to hear that massive clunk against the metal. I thought, well, that's a bit much. But yeah, when his body hits the floor and basically is like a plank of wood falling over, it was pretty poor.
Wasn't it?
It wasn't believable at all. But they sort of, I don't quite know what they were doing with it. Like you say, it's clumsy because they've done this horrendous head hitting metal clunk breaking neck sound to then hitting the floor in a comical fashion.
Yeah.
So what are you trying to do here?
And after 9 minutes, you realise that Kevin Bacon is the one who's double-crossing. You think it's just purely on the gold front, which I like. You think it's just down to the fact that I don't want to be grassed up. And kind of, he says that, Kevin Bacon does, in the dialogue of when he shoots Ryan Reynolds. But what I do think is clever is when he dies, that everything freezes. And obviously he's going to go up to heaven, but the way, it's like the start of Deadpool, when that car's exploding and everything's frozen and the music, it's exactly the same. Ryan Reynolds walking amongst the set with people flying through the air, birds are frozen in the air, and the fire's kind of frozen. And it's those special effects for me work really well. They're so clever.
Oh, they are very good. That's the thing. I think certain elements of this film are good. I can't recall seeing it prior, if you see what I mean. It's quite fun that he was walking through very confused, like, why has everything just stopped? He must have realised he's dead, but he obviously hasn't, because it goes on to that. But, the actual effects themselves are quite good, very good.
It is good. And then as he's walking, he gets sucked off the earth.
Whoa, lucky guy. Yeah.
Exactly. He goes up to the pearly gates, and that's when he meets another character.
I bet she's got some lovely pearly gates, that one, to be fair.
What, Proctor?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a really good character. To a certain extent, yeah. I wish they would have used her more.
Yeah, I do as well.
And I'd love to know why, because she has got a really dry sense of humour. And I think it would have been interesting just to get more. I know it's an hour and a half, and that's probably the reason why. But why, if she could have got more of a backstory as to why she's there.
Yeah, it would have been. But like you say, I just don't think it was sharp. Maybe they would have done that in other films if they were hoping this was going to be a massive franchise. Maybe the next film would have featured her more and a bit more of a backstory or how she got there and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, probably.
I wonder whether she was married to the director, you know.
Really?
Because she was in Red as well, Red 1 and 2. I think she plays Bruce Willis's kind of girlfriend in that.
Doesn't she? Yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't know whether she got that gig because whether she was married to him or not. I mean, I'm probably not doing her justice.
But some directors just choose the same actors, though, don't they? They're quite, they like to cast the same ones for every film. So.
Yeah, but I mean, when you've got, like, I don't know if you're a fan of, like, the Resident Evil series and stuff like that.
Yeah, to a degree.
Yeah, because I've not seen any of the Resident Evil films. I may have seen, no, I think I've seen half of the first one, I think.
Right.
But the guy who directed that is married to Milovich.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
So, and she's been in loads and loads of his films. So I know that does happen on a few occasions when you've got different film projects that you kind of wonder, how did this person actually get this job? And then you realise that, that's
why.
That's interesting. But that's Paul W.S. Anderson. So and I think, if I might be wrong, we could be coming to Paul W.S. Anderson, because he did go through one of the Terminator films, which we're going to be.
Oh, did he really?
I could be.
It's a really shit one.
I could be doing him a discredit there, and he may not have done that. But I honestly thought that. No, I can't see anything with regards to Terminator, but I thought he did. I thought he was involved in it somehow. But there you go. Shows you what I know. So Alien vs. Predator, Resident Evil. No, he hasn't. So I apologise for that. So,
Stu, you have me all hyped up then.
I know. I'll have to find out who it was who was involved in one of their Terminator films, because it was someone very, very similar. I just could be getting my wires crossed completely. I really don't know. So when he goes up to heaven, his basic job is to catch criminals who escape from heaven or escape from hell and recapture them and get them locked up again. And that's exactly the same what they happen to do in Men in Black, is capture the aliens and send them back up to whatever planet they've come to. So they're not inventive in the ideas of what they need to do, which is a shame. But again, it's targeted for kids, and it needs to remain simple, doesn't it?
It does, because you don't want to make it too overly complicated, because as we said earlier, they don't really care, other than, is it a good person, a bad person? It's the cool stuff. Yeah.
And from ticking the boxes, that's when we meet Roy. And I didn't know whether it was Roy as in Roy Rogers, because he's a cowboy character who Jeff Bridges plays, and he's got the most annoying and sometimes hard to understand accent. It must have been hard for him to maintain that accent throughout the film.
I don't know if he had something in his mouth or something to try and keep it going, because I love Jeff, but his accent in this was crap. It was really hard sometimes, wasn't it? Because it was just
It was so difficult annoying. To follow.
Yeah.
What I did like was the idea of when they're in this massive open office, that you've got loads of police officers from, like, English ones, through obviously the American ones, through different eras, through different uniforms, who've all died in service. Yeah. And they use, and that's what I mean. Some of the ideas in this are really good. And it was so close to being original and good flowing and entertaining. And they just lost it. I think just because of Jeff Bridges' accent, one of them was so annoying. His character was so over the top and tropey.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? It was. It was just massively over the top. Hugely. It's, I don't know, it's almost, I don't know, maybe I'm being cruel, but it's like you've got two quite big actors trying to out-act each other.
Yeah.
I want to be the big dog. No, I want to be, you know.
Yeah, I completely agree. It'd be interesting to know. Well, you'll never know these things because in the interviews, they always make out what good mates they are. Of just if there was ego problems. And you kind of, I don't know, you get that impression there was. And you just don't get that energy, as I said before, from Ryan Reynolds. But this film kind of fluctuates up and down like a bloody heartbeat monitor of good ideas and bad ideas. And I love the concept they've got that they come back. And obviously Ryan Reynolds wants to come back down to Earth because he wants to get back with his girlfriend or at least see her to explain what happened. But when they come back, that they're not themselves. I think that's such a clever idea.
It is.
And it's just brilliant because I kind of wondered when I first saw this how they're going to get around it. And that's when you see that Nick's avatar, which is Ryan Reynolds' character, is played by James Hong, is a really small 60-year-old Oriental guy. It's brilliant.
It's fantastic.
And no wonder when he confronts her at the funeral that everyone thinks that it's absolutely bonkers because Reynolds sees himself as he is. And she just sees the old Chinese guy. And I think it's genius. That Roy happens to be Marissa Miller, who's a lingerie model. And it is absolutely stunning. And teamed up with some small Chinese guy. It's absolutely brilliant.
It is brilliant. And he actually, that is played really well with Jeff being her. Because like when all the blokes basically just drool over him. Knowing that it's who it is, and he's, you know, always going, I'm not just a piece of meat and stuff like that. I thought it was brilliant. The way they did that was funny.
Yeah, it is superb. And I think it works well also that when they use, I mean, I've seen James Hong in other films before, but obviously Marissa Miller, I think she's been used kind of token gesturing of very few films. She hasn't got any acting ability, but obviously she is lovely looking, and they use her just enough not to ruin it, because it would have ruined it if they'd have used her any more, because obviously it's not aimed at that audience of dads like us who are complete pervs and want to look at that. It's aimed at children who just want to look at things exploding and monsters and car chases.
Exactly. That's there for comedy element, plus the dad gets in, says, hey, I'll take you to cinema to watch that, mate.
I don't mind seeing it four times. It's amazing it's only made 70 million considering, you know.
They should just put her on the box and said, dad, take your son to see this, and it wouldn't have happened. It would have been fine.
Yeah, you've got someone like Pamela Anderson to play Ryan Reynolds' character, maybe it would have made 150
300 million easy.
But you soon learn these guys aren't there to investigate anything. They're simply there to catch these people and bring them back. They're not there to investigate crimes. And Roy, Jeff Bridges' character, has thankfully got that trope where he doesn't want a character. And all the way through, he's really dismissive of Ryan Reynolds and calls him Rook, as in a rookie, and insulting him all the way through. And you know that at the end, that box is going to be ticked and he's got his respect and appreciation. It's an all-time trope that still goes on now.
Oh, yeah. Rookie and the Master. You know, it's in everything, isn't it? There's nothing unpredictable about this film, is there, in the sense of its storyline and the way it's written. There's a couple of good little elements in it, like you say, about the alternates. So the people that are still alive don't know who the dead people are and stuff like that. But scripting-wise, there's nothing unusual whatsoever.
No, it's strange some of the choices they make, because the first time that they go and catch someone, it's a guy, Teabag, from Prison Break, who's a really good actor, who plays a really good kind of baddie, and he's another character who plays a bad character in virtually everything that he does, and he stops and gets a curry, and it's really strange, because they open the door, and obviously they look like the female and the Oriental guy, and he lets them in. And Ryan Reynolds, for some reason, reads off cue cards whilst Jeff Bridges eats the curry in front of him. And it's the curry that they don't like. And I couldn't see the point of what Ryan Reynolds was doing reading the cue cards, what that actually meant. It wasn't explained, and I don't know why they were doing that. Do you?
I think it's because it mentioned in like that curry dishes. Every single one ended with a curry dish. So it's to gauge their reaction, because even the names of it gives them a reaction, so to speak. So rather than eating a vindaloo every time you interview someone, I think what they're supposed to do is go through the cue cards to see if they start getting all reactive and sweaty and gaggy.
Okay, I just couldn't see the point of the cue cards. And it seemed to be the curry that was getting a reaction from the guy, changing him into an alien. And it was reading those cards. But yeah, that kind of does make sense. And he does change. The metamorphosis have turned into a monster. Special effects aren't that good, but they're not that bad. And they're quite entertaining. And I always like it when people sprout two hands from one hand. And it's just entertaining to see what ideas they're going to come up with. And I quite enjoyed this change, to be honest, even though the special effects weren't great.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, you know, like I said earlier, it's definitely dated in the CGI stakes. Considering how much money they spent on it, I'm a little bit disappointed with that. But it was still good. It's still good fun. You can't take away from that.
No, exactly. You get into the foot chase, and he does jump out the window, and it's kind of Blade style, the way he jumps out of the window. And then Ryan Reynolds is literally pushed out of the window by Jeff Bridges. And Bridges kind of goes on riding him rodeo style as he falls. And again, I didn't like that part of it. I couldn't see the point of it. It was ridiculous.
No, it's trying to be funny, and it wasn't funny. It was just, it was weird. Why would you start riding a man in midair and telling him to go limp? And it was just, I didn't get it either.
Paint a picture like that? There's no good time when you ride a man and tell him to go limp.
Well, exactly. It's just, yeah. I mean, if you were riding me and you tell me, I say, Stuart, it's impossible. It's impossible. I can't.
But he rides him until they land on the floor. And whilst they're pointing a gun at him, and Ryan Reynolds is holding his arm that he's just had ripped off, this kind of monster thing chucks up those gold bits, the same gold bits, funnily enough, that he's burying his garden, funnily enough, which Kevin Bacon has also stolen. And that kind of puts in question of, you instantly know these are going to be the lead as to why there's so many gold bits, why so many people have got them. And they start an investigation, something that they don't actually need to do and aren't allowed to do.
Yeah. But
I like that. And it's a really simple set of breadcrumbs that you follow through all of this film. It isn't complicated in any part. And sometimes my brain needs that, you know.
Yeah. That's the thing, isn't it? Sometimes you do just want to sit down and watch a film that basically paints the picture for you in such a sense. It's like paint by numbers, isn't it? It really is.
And it's strange that when they're back at the headquarters, and obviously they then show you that, I think the reason why they've got the gold, for two reasons, is plot driven. And another reason is to show you their property store as to where things go. A really padded out scene, which wasn't needed. And you know this scene is so long because it's there for foreshadow.
Oh, God, yeah. Why would you need to show where everything comes out of, and these stupid little baskets which aren't secure at all? It's just bollocks, isn't it? You've got all these convoluted massive doors and chains, and then they put it in a tiny little basket.
It's really strange. And you also learn that Roy and Proctor did get it on at some point. Did they get it on when they were alive? Did they get it on when they were dead? I'd like to know more about that.
Their relationship was quite good in this. I have to say, it was sort of a kind of a saving grace, because Jeff and her chemistry was very good. In actual facts, you found it quite believable, because she clearly just fucking hates him at this point. And he's obviously done something that's really hacked her off, and she's trying to do anything to piss him off, basically. But yeah,
she does a good job. She does very good job. So they go to see one of the informants at this baseball ground, and I quite like this, the way they planned it out, is that Reynolds gives him a bit of the gold just to look after. He's denying any knowledge of it and says you're stuck with it and it's worthless. They then sit and watch him to see what he's going to do with that bit of gold, which I like the fact that Bridges didn't understand what was happening, because it was good old fashioned police work. I quite like the way they flipped that around, that Ryan Reynolds for once was the clever guy, was the font of knowledge.
Oh, no, definitely, because Jeff's back from the Old West, isn't he? His character.
Yeah, the 1800s.
So, yeah, things were very different back then. I'm sure it probably wasn't much investigation. You're guilty, you got shot. It was quite a nice switcheroo.
They hung you, basically, no matter what you did. It's like in the medieval days, you're a witch. This is, you're going to drown you or burn you. You got an option.
Yeah. If you don't drown...
You're then meant to be... Sorry, mate, go on.
No, I was going to say, if you don't drown, then you're innocent. You know, you're a witch, so we'll kill you. But if you drown, then you're innocent. Yeah, it's impossible.
The odds were against you then, weren't they?
Yeah, you're fucked either way.
But we're meant to be surprised then as an audience that Kevin Bacon turns up and takes the gold bit off his informant. And we're meant to be, oh my God, Kevin Bacon is a baddie. He's in on it, which we obviously knew already. But it does work out quite well, because he does go to the ex of Ryan Reynolds. And I like the fact that Bridges instantly says he's banging your ex missus. And I thought that when I first saw this, I thought he got his feet under the table and he was having a taste of it. I honestly did.
I think he was trying. I think because he's such an evil bastard. I think he is trying to give her one, as well as find the gold and everything else, because she comes into it a lot later as well, doesn't she?
It's strange, because I thought if he's trying to get into a knickers, then he's obviously planning the end of the world, so to speak. Mm. And it kind of, she'll die as part of this, and part of this, like, she was going to die anyway, as we know. So it was strange that he clearly didn't want a relationship. I think, as you say, he just wanted to get in bed with her, and that was it.
Yeah. He's the ultimate wants to fuck over his partner. He's killed him. He's going to nick his gold. He's going to shag his missus. And then he's going to kill her later anyway. You know,
and he does it really, really well. He makes out, he finds the gold, and he kind of shits on the name of Nick's character, saying that he was a bent copper, and I'll take this off your hands. It's all really, really contrived and convenient for Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. At the end of the day, it's not hard to follow, is it? Bless it.
It's not really. It's not. I'm all over this at the moment. I feel quite proud and confident, I have to say. But they do decide to follow Kevin Bacon. And again, it leads to another really good scene, that the reason why that they can follow anyone is because obviously they don't look like who they do. And again, this guy hits on Jeff Bridges' character when he's up at the top of the building. Oh, she looks genius. Stunning to everyone. And it's really good feedback that he gets. And it's really, really funny. I'd like to have seen them done more with the use of the Oriental guy and the model. I think that could have worked. They could have done a lot more jokes using both of them as their kind of their avatars, you know.
Yeah, I think so. It would have been quite funny if Hong basically started telling people to fuck off and stuff like that, you know, in some sort of funny, being all serious, but he's just a little Chinese man, so you couldn't really take him seriously, if you like. They could have gone with it, couldn't they? But they just didn't, unfortunately.
Yeah, it would have been good for, say, I know it's a 12, but for Jeff Bridges' character to go into, I don't know, like a nightclub with all these men hitting on, and he's trying to hit on women, and it just, he forgets he's a woman, it doesn't work out. They could have done so many different situations that would have been really, really good.
Yeah, and even
the Oriental guy, they could have played that out in some way. That would have been good fun. I think Ryan Reynolds would have done that really well, because off the cuff, really quick humour is something that he is good at, and he is naturally confident at.
So oh, definitely.
It's a real shame they missed that.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. I couldn't agree more, to be honest.
But this Elvis character who goes and gives Kevin Bacon like the diamonds. The diamonds, God, that's another film I've been watching.
He collects the gold off of Kevin, doesn't he?
Yeah, he collects the gold. And they take him away. And I like this Elvis character. He's just got the Elvis glasses on. He's really fucking fat and just looks a really cool, horrible character. You can imagine him horrible, cracking them out onto pornography in some kind of caravan, all sweaty and wearing a vest when he gets home.
Yeah,
he's definitely. Just horrid.
Gross, but isn't he?
He does get taken away. And I don't know why. Not kidnap him, but Ryan Reynolds puts a gun to his head and they take him to this like massive fridge, and he gets some like oregano. And I know that different kind of aliens have different reactions to stuff, but I never picked up on anyone telling him this, and he just picks it up himself.
Yeah, it's the cumin, and it's the spice that's obviously quite heavily used in sort of that style of cooking.
So where did he get that from, that he'd have a reaction to it, though? Was it ever mentioned?
No, I think it's like the curry thing, isn't it? So that's how they pop them, in the sense of you give them spices that are used in sort of Indian cuisine or that type of thing, and that they're likely to react to it. So that's why they're threatening with that.
I think I was looking clearly too much into this, to be honest.
Yeah, you were, mate. Yeah. Take a step back, Stu. Take a step back, son.
But this guy kind of embraces that change, and he rubs his face in the spice, and he changes into someone who's exactly the same as Fat Bastard from Austin Powers, isn't he?
Just pretty much. Slightly less hygiene, maybe.
You really are a fat bastard. I'm bigger than you. I'm higher in the food chain. Get in my belly. Come on.
And it looks like he's wearing a thong in one scene as well, which I thought was quite funny. But
looks absolutely hideous. But it is Fat Bastard, without a doubt. They've ripped Fat Bastard off.
I don't know. Just something about this character, I just didn't enjoy it at all. I don't know if it's the voice acting in it, the whole sort of stupid noise that he makes. But after a while, it just really got on my tits.
Yeah, it's a bit of a lame chase they do have, isn't it? It's really strange. And what the problem is, obviously, because you've got some monster running out in the broad daylight that everyone can see, and they try and make this covert and do their investigations without anyone knowing about these monsters coming back from hell.
Yeah.
So, but what I did like was, obviously, they're kind of avatars, and they're running around with guns. But to the public looking at them, they're holding bananas. I think that worked so well when you've got the Oriental guy pointing a banana up. And I thought that was brilliant. I cracked up at that. I thought he was laughing at the wrong part, but I thought it worked so well.
It's good.
So good.
When he gets hit by the car and he just picks himself up and he's holding a banana. And they're like, you all right? And he's like, yeah, fine. Just runs off holding a banana. So what the fuck is going on?
But it's really good. And the chase scene is okay. It's been done many times before, and it's been done many times better. And the special effects really suffer, considering it's 2013. And the budget, as you said earlier, was so big. I'd love to know where this budget went, because it certainly wasn't on the special effects.
It really wasn't. It really wasn't on the special effects. And you know what you say, it does. It just goes on and on and on, doesn't it? This does. And it could have been done a lot quicker.
Yeah, and it's absolutely terrible. And from what they've done, they then learn conveniently, and it's even spelt out in pictures, the actual rest of the story is, instead of internal affairs, you've got eternal affairs. Yeah. And they send this printout picture of the gold is to do with a gate opening from hell, and everyone's going to come back and the dead are going to walk the earth. Again, it's been done many times before. It's quite a popular, safe storyline to do.
Of course,
but because of them absolutely screwing up hugely as they did, that they're going to be basically exterminated, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, basically they've got a day left in limbo, I guess is what it is. And then they're going to be judged and off they go.
So would they have gone to hell, do you think? Or would they just be wiped out? I couldn't work out what would happen.
Yeah, I couldn't work that out either, to be honest, because I didn't realise there was a way. I thought it would have been heaven or hell, and they would have just been sent to hell as like, you know, you fucked up in life and you fucked up here, so off you go. So, yeah.
Yeah, it would have been nice to have that side of things, because I naturally assumed this was heaven that they were in, because everything's white. It would have been good to have a message from hell, like little Nicky, something like that. They're expecting you, you know what I mean? Nicky, I think that would have been really good.
I like that. Yeah, I think, yeah, for the way I saw it, I think it was like a limbo where they're kept there to do a job for 100, because he was there for 100 years. And then obviously if he did a good job, he'd be sent up to, or he'd be, they look at it, don't they, to see what you did. And then it's either, well, you still did a shit job, so off to hell you go, or up to heaven. But
yeah.
So
it says you'll most likely be erased. And when you think Proctor's got feelings for, which she clearly does have, for Jeff Bridges' character, that she doesn't seem too pissed off about it. I would have expected her to try and do something, but again, she doesn't. It just seems really lame and convenient, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it does. It's, you know, it's so difficult, isn't it? Because earlier their chemistry was really good and everything. And I don't know, there was, you think there would have been more of a reaction, but there wasn't. It was just,
no,
there was no reaction at all, really. It didn't lead into the story. And the problem is you haven't really grown attached to either of the characters either. So
no.
At this point, I wasn't like, oh no, I hope they get out of this. It just, you know. You knew they would because of the type of film it was, but I didn't really care.
No, and the film starts to fall apart for me. It flows up to now. It flows okay. It's a bearable film to watch, and it's mildly entertaining. Some of the decisions they make are really, really strange. The biggest and the worst and strangest decision they make is, bear in mind that Ryan Reynolds' character is a tiny 60-year-old Oriental guy, that he decides to go to the running track where Julia, his girlfriend, is running, or his wife, we never know the difference. And she doesn't know him from Adam. The first time she saw him, she told him to piss off because he's a real weirdo. But now he walks up to her, touches her face, and kind of rubs her face in, and we see it from Ryan Reynolds' side. We don't see it from the Oriental guy's side.
Yeah.
And she looks at him as if she recognizes that it's Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah,
and he says, I haven't left you, and it doesn't make sense. It's awful that she'd never guess this was Ryan Reynolds in a million years.
Of course she wouldn't. She'd think, why is this 6-year-old man touching my face in a secluded place where no one else is? You know, fuck that. You'd scream your head off and run the other way, wouldn't you? It's bollocks. Unless it's, they're awful, trying to say that touch was like a connection and stuff. But if they're dead, surely his touch would have been stone cold. You know,
Yeah. They're
not alive. They don't eat. It says earlier when he's eating a hot dog in the stadium and he goes, oh, I can't taste anything. He goes, well, of course you can't. You're dead. So there's lots of little things, isn't there, in there, which you just like, oh, it just doesn't make any sense. You're shoving it together because you need it to make sense.
Yeah, it's really very, very strange, some of the decisions they make. I know they were going for a sentimental moment, and this had to be a reason as to getting Ryan Reynolds back on track, getting him focused to try and find a way out. But the strange thing, again, is that Jeff Bridges' character is so resigned, even though he's been around for a lot longer, since the 1800s, that he's resigned to the fact that they are going to be erased, and he's happy just to sit it out until that happens. Again, it doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. You're right. He's sitting there playing his accordion, singing songs about coyotes and stuff like that. It's just like, hang on, mate. You know, you've got this massive fucking attitude that you've been through the whole film, and now all of a sudden you're like, yeah, okay, I'll take it on the chin. I'm gonna be wiped out. It's like,
it doesn't. Yeah, and it's only the speech that Ryan Reynolds gives that kind of gees him up.
The thing is,
stop him from doing what he's doing.
It is, and you know, you don't need that scene with him going off to his ex either, because you know the whole point of why he wants to do what he's doing is that chance to get back to see her. It just, it's a bit padded, isn't it? And it just, like you say, there's a lot of decisions they've made that don't need to be made and put into the film.
Yeah, I think if they would have cut the padded out bits, this film could have been about 1 hour 15 minutes. And I suppose if they were going for a blockbuster, I'm glad it wasn't 2 hours long, because it would have been terrible.
No, you're right. You're right.
But they do move it along nicely from here. No, not at all. But I mean, from here, Kevin Bacon speaks to Julia and knows, and she kind of comes up with the bizarre comment that I felt that Nick, that he was there. I know it sounds really crazy. And again, that's more foreshadow of, I know he's back, that there's something going on. And that he kind of ups the stakes for his end of the world plan, and he arranges to meet her. And you've got Jeff Bridges and Reynolds turn up at Nick's house because they know obviously he's crooked, and they do try and call him out on it. But for once, Kevin Bacon's character is kind of one step ahead. And again, the foreshadow of that bracelet comes into effect of it does protect him.
Yeah, yes, to take the St. Christopher off, and he can reveal who he is. Not that he actually does.
And it keeps him in character to a certain extent, doesn't it? But they do arrest him. He doesn't put up any kind of resistance. And you know it's part of a plan, because all he does is sit in the back of the police car when he's being taken to the headquarters, and he's just smiling. And it's just pretty lame. And the reason why he does is they go back to the property store, which, again, they overshowed and over-described what happens, where he puts this device in, which explodes and freezes everyone at the RIPD headquarters. And all of the baddies escape, and they're escaping with all of the gold, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, it's...
It's a massive plot driver with little payoff. It's just pointless.
It's crap. It's just... It goes back, doesn't it, to... I've got this really convoluted way of storing your stuff, but we put it in little baskets. And even though they've had one half of this device booked in earlier with one of Kevin's cronies, they chuck the other half in as well. And then it obviously connects, doesn't it? And then explodes. And it's just so badly written in that sense. It's just so frustrating. It's like, at least give us a bit.
I think it's because when you get these scenes, the tension isn't there. No. When it's all frozen and the baddies are escaping and they're trying to shoot that ball to stop everything from freezing, that there just isn't tension. You know they're not going to die.
Yeah.
I hate these things. I don't like the prolonging of, you know what's going to happen, because it's just so basic. It's just get on with it. I'd rather sacrifice that for action. It would have been great if all of the police would have left and there was a massive shootout in the street with multiple police officers shooting multiple monsters. That would have been much more entertaining than some built-up tension which wasn't there in the first place, you know?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's just, it's crap. And then they do arrive on the streets, and somehow this one of the dead guys has got a fucking minigun that's shooting these bullets that can only kill dead people. But where the bloody hell did he get that from?
I think they must have nicked that from the RIPD headquarters.
Maybe they did. You just didn't see them looting anything, did you, other than the gold? Unless I missed it. I don't know.
No, they didn't show you looting anything. But this is only 20 minutes from the end of the film already.
Mm.
And they really fitted quite a lot in for the last 20 minutes and the previous hour and 15 minutes. And what I don't understand is, I take it this must be New York City or Chicago or somewhere like that, whether it's in Canada where they normally film.
Boston, I think.
Because you've got these multiple kind of vortexes that are turning up around the city, which are destroying everything. And you've got all of the baddies, like the monsters, who are going to this building, because what they're going to do is build this ark made out of all of the gold bits, which will open up the portal. Yeah. But I don't understand the point of all of these multiple vortexes that are around the city, do you? That they're destroying the city. I don't know whether that's their intention or what the point of them is. It's not explained.
It isn't explained. And just going back very quickly, what did you think of Jeff's scene of him returning to being a cowboy and being able to shoot things?
Let's learn you a few things about Old West fighting. First, only a novice hides in a church steeple. It's the first place I'm gonna look. Second place, hotel window every time.
I guess there's only one novice in their crew.
Just at an instant.
I liked it, first of all. I liked it when he quick drew and shot both of them in the head from behind the car. But then they milked it of on the roof, on the window of the church tower. And it bored me after a while. You just knew what was going to happen. What did you think?
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. But it just earlier on, he couldn't shoot shit. And now all of a sudden, he can shoot anything from, you know, 1,000 yards away sort of thing. It's just I didn't quite understand it. It's just, I don't know if they were just trying to build his character a bit more to, oh, actually he is a badass cowboy. You know, it just didn't need to me. Like, it would have been fun to shoot. He shot the two guys. That's the end of it. Look how good I am. But it just went on.
Yeah. I think they were trying to give him his moment, weren't they? Because he's gone on about how life was and how tough things were back in the old days. And I think that was his moment, but it wasn't a moment that worked out well for me. I would like to have been more stakes involved than him just shooting two goons if he was involved in a shootout. If there was someone who was really, really good, really dangerous, and that he could have died, that would have been more entertaining than just shooting two goons who you knew were going to die anyway, you know?
No, I completely agree. I just thought I'd ask...
No, it's like traditional no name badge. You know they're going to die at some point, don't you?
Yeah, definitely.
So it was like when we did a Galaxy Quest that you've got cast member number 6 who knows he's going to die. So Sam Rockwell. And these two were the Sam Rockwells of this film, you know.
What a podcast that was as well, by the way. That's well worth a listen, everyone. I listened to that. Stu and James did one where I wasn't available, and it's well worth a listen. I was laughing my bits off.
It's very nice of you to say. I enjoyed doing it, mate. Galaxy Quest was really good to watch.
It's a good film.
Yeah, hadn't seen it, and I was pleasantly surprised, and it was really, really good to review. I thought it was going to be utter trash, but I didn't realise the cast was that good, and the script would be that good.
It's a piss take, isn't it, of sci-fi, and it's just, it doesn't take itself seriously, but it's just brilliant. The whole thing's fantastic. Yeah.
Anyway. It's the best Star Trek film in a long, long time. And I really liked it. I thought it was just such a good film. Yeah. It's a good, fun, easy podcast to listen to. And it's the last one we did. So we're reaching the I say climax very loosely. That you've got the portal on the roof. And what I was really surprised about, though, was the fact that you've got Julia who's on the roof, and it's got to be no other way. It's got to be a blood sacrifice. It always is. I don't know why it's her, but it has to be her, probably because we need Nick's girlfriend as a sacrifice. And he's got this metal pole, and he actually sticks it through her and lifts her up with it. I was really surprised that he actually stuck a metal pole inside Ryan Reynolds' girlfriend in this.
Yeah, it's a bit violent, considering you've not seen any blood at all in this film. It's kept it, you know, apart from the first bit where he smashes his head on something, it's been really, you know, laser guns and that type of stuff. And now all of a sudden you've got someone speared and blood pouring out of them and then going into this monument. It turned very dark.
And it was also interesting. What did you think of Kevin Bacon's obviously come out of that closet that he is like a monster from hell. And what did you think of the makeup on Kevin Bacon's face?
I thought it was all CGI because it looked terrible. I don't think any of that was makeup. I think it was all, that is pure CGI Bacon, that is.
Yeah, CGI Bacon. It's Sorry, my simple mind just finds that funny. But I completely agree. It looked really strange on his face. And a lot of it didn't look symmetrical. It was really weird looking. It didn't help him at all, I don't think.
No, I think all of the demons are like that. They almost all of them look cartoon-like. They don't look real, if you see what I mean. And that's probably because they don't want it to, because they didn't want to scare little kids that they want to watch this film, perhaps. Or,
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe
that. Yeah, I suppose it's a lot easier. Maybe that's where the budget went on. Everyone's got CGI and a green screen, every single person's face in here.
It's huge.
Yeah, like they did with Cable in Deadpool. But, and again, I know they're very limited on what they can do, but, and they have to kind of keep the rating down, but the fight between Kevin Bacon and Ryan Reynolds at the end is really anticlimactic. It's really short, and again, you know which way it's going to go. And I think this hampers a lot of films when they're restricted to their reviews, their age restriction,
yeah,
of what they can actually do. And I think some directors, unless you're really clever, again, writing it or directing it, as to how you can do a suitable ending that will be good for the audience and keep it in a rating.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. It's the same thing though, isn't it? It's just person gets stabbed as sacrifice, good guy fights bad guy, runs out of bullets, ends up having to have a fist fight with CGI Bacon, and while Jeff is trying to take and plot the monument but can't, and it was just all a bit naff, really. And then you got her sitting there with her hand out going,
oh, yeah, it was a lot of hard work. It was really, really difficult. And again, when there's no and I'm struggling and I'm worrying that Black Widow is going to be like this, when there isn't any suspense, because you know what's going to happen. It is very hard to be invested in this film. And I found that towards the end, just because you just knew which way it was going to go. But
oh, you knew, didn't you?
All of the monsters obviously don't come to Earth. And I think it would have been quite nice if you'd have seen some of the monsters of the types of people who are going to come to Earth, and maybe put a bit more story and a bit more entertainment into that, because he shoots Kevin Bacon and then it's all over. And you learn that the girlfriend, even though you believe she's dead, because they do put that suspense and that everything freezes, as like when Reynolds died, that she isn't dead and that things are going to continue and she's going to be okay. And kind of Reynolds then is at peace with himself, and she is, because she's seen him kind of in his true form, doesn't she?
Yeah, which again, I didn't understand either, because it's like, so is she dead or is she half dead? Surely she wouldn't be seeing him if she's half dead. And then it didn't really make a lot of sense, to be honest. I know they had to do it because it's that nice lovey-dovey ending of he gets his closure and so does she. But it was crap.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I thought that because I didn't remember her dying. And I thought, as you said, the only way you see this side of heaven or wherever you're going to go is if you die.
Yeah.
And she's clearly dead on that rooftop. And if they would have brought her back, she would have had lost so much oxygen to the brain, she'd be like a vegetable.
Exactly.
So it doesn't make any sense. Yeah, you're spot on, but it makes a lovely romantic ending for the children as well as the mums and dads.
It does.
And again, it's Proctor who's seeing her in the hospital, and that they're kind of all back. The balance has been restored, that they're both back in it, and it's a bizarre ending. That she gets him a hat, he loses his hat, and that's a massive deal to him. He's lost his cowboy hat. And they're both going to be partnered up as buddy cops again. And she bites his beard rather than kissing him. I could not understand when she goes in. I thought she was going to kiss him. And you'd see that relationship between Proctor and Jeff Bridges. But why did she bite his beard?
Well, that's the thing. It went weird because she goes, I like the violence. And then bit his beard. And it's like, this is a bit much for a 12, isn't it?
Really, you know what I mean? Really strange.
It's a bit odd. Give him a kiss. It's a 12. You know, you don't go around biting people at 12, do you? Not unless you're a bit weird.
It just
didn't need it at all.
Yes. Yeah. And she says, I like violence, not violence.
Oh, was it? Oh, I thought she said violence. So, no, it's obviously the flowers. I was thinking, fucking hell, this is going a bit S&M here. I don't quite understand where this film's gone. But that's just my hearing because I'm old.
I must admit, I thought she said violence, first of all. Okay. But yeah.
Thank God it's not violence. Okay, violence. Okay, she needs to speak pair. That's my...
But again, that doesn't justify why she'd go in and bite his beard. It's really, really strange.
It was a bit odd. But there you go. Because they both get held back, don't they? So they have their sentence increased, don't they?
And I guess
it's like the third time that it's happened to Jeff or something like that. Because I guess it is 100 years, but they've both been given an extra 50. And part of that is probably because Proctor wants Jeff to be around still. Even though she pretended she hated him, she probably still loved him and all this sort of stuff. That's how I read into that.
Yeah, completely. And it's strange because if they would have, I know like they don't, but in my simple mind, if they would have filmed this in the order of kind of the way it was actually shot and the way it was screened, I always think at the end of this, they must have been patting each other on the back, buzzing with excitement that they've, in the story, they've been extended their sentence. So here we go. There's a number two. There's a number three. We could get a TV series out of this.
We could get all sorts.
It must have been awful that this just bombed so badly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, like you said, I mean, did he, Ryan, this is halfway through this or whatever, just think, fuck me, this is shit? Because he didn't have... There was no energy from him in this film whatsoever. When you compare it to films such as Deadpool and stuff like that, where it's just boundless. He basically captivates you. Even his one-liners, you're just like, oh, that was quality. There was none of that in this whatsoever.
No. Yeah, I wonder that as well. And I wondered that in my second viewing when it was really, you look for everything else. And yeah, it really did affect the film. And it's amazing how much it actually did affect the film. But
Yeah.
I mean, then the film just ends and that's it. I mean, that is RIPD 2013. I mean, it's a film when you read the reviews, especially the reviews on like IMDb and just all over the internet, really, it gets hammered out of 100. It scores as low as 12 and 16.
Wow.
And stuff like that. It's that's really, harsh. Really, yeah, it's hammered. And people always... put it against Men in Black, and I think that's where it really, really did suffer. And you wonder why they go against something that works so well on and mirror it with just changing the storyline. I mean, it's a recipe for disaster. But I liked it more than I did. I mean, if I had to score it, it probably sounds better if you score it out of 5. It doesn't sound like you're hammering it so much. But I'd probably give it maybe a 2 out of 5.
Yeah.
And I'd say it's not something that's rewatchable. I watched it twice in 2 days just for this podcast. I wouldn't watch it again. And I wouldn't, if it was, if I was flicking and I came across it, I wouldn't stop and watch it. The best bits are really, really hard to find. There aren't any bits in this film. I mean, the chasing with the banana was quite amusing. It wasn't kind of laugh out loud hysterical. The worst bits, there are a hell of a lot of worse bits. It's, and I think that's a reflection of how much you enjoyed it, when it's easier to talk about what went wrong than what you can talk about to celebrate a film. And I think there's just so much wrong with this film, and it's weird that it's not a trash, terrible film. I think it just came up with the wrong ideas, pit itself against too many films which were just much, much better. And I think that was its downfall, that it wasn't an original idea. But it was all right. I wouldn't recommend it. It isn't rewatchable. What did you think of it?
To be honest, mate, I couldn't agree more. I was thinking 1 or 2. I'd give it a 2 because I'm feeling generous out of 5.
Wow.
And it's only because I'm feeling generous. I wouldn't watch this again. When I watched it the first time, probably about 6 months ago, I vowed never to watch it again. But then we said, let's review it. So I pushed myself to do it. And I have to say, I enjoyed it more the second time than I did the first, because I didn't have any expectations of it. Whereas the first time, I was hoping it was going to be good because of the cast, and it was trash. So on the second, would I ever watch it again? No, I would, and like you, if I was flicking through channels, I certainly wouldn't stop going, oh, there's RIPD. I'd love this bit because there's no bits in it I love. I think because there isn't, you know, other than, like you say, other than Hong with the banana and maybe the model taking the piss out of the guy for ogling her, they're your funniest bits. And they're not even from the main characters in the film. So that just goes to show you how well written they were. So, yeah, the best bits, probably Hong and a banana, because it's just ridiculous having a man running around with a banana pretending to shoot people. And I think the worst bits are the fact that there was just nothing there. There was no chemistry. And Jeff Bridges, as much as I love him, his voice was so fucking annoying throughout this whole film. It just, you know, you're just like, just talk properly, for fuck's sake. So, yeah, I wouldn't recommend it, really, unless you want something in the background that you're not really giving a shit about watching.
Yeah, completely agree. Completely agree. I'll tell you one thing that I do recommend that really is worth watching that I've been so excited about, and I'll probably sit and watch it again, is Invincible on Amazon Prime. It's an adult cartoon and it's superhero origin of a character called Invincible. And the cast of this is just incredible. It's Stephen Yeun, it's J.K. Simmons, Sandra Oh. You got Gray Griffin. There's just so many. You've got Walton Goggins. You've got Seth Rogen, Clancy Brown. Mark Hamill's even narrates some of the voice. And it's absolutely amazing. Zachary Quinto, he's in it as well. And it's just so, so good. It's really ultra violent.
Yeah.
But it's a superhero origin story. It isn't for children. There is lots of swearing in there. And it's very, very graphic. It's 8 episodes. All of them are about 50 minutes long. But it's just, it's so good.
And yeah, I want to watch it.
When you watch it, you forget it's a cartoon. Because it's that good, you just get so involved in it. And season 2 has been greenlit for 2022 and season 3 as well.
Blimey.
And it's brilliant. I mean, I might even do a short video just on YouTube about it, just so I can tell everyone just how good it is. It's absolutely brilliant. Totally, 100% recommend it. It's a 5 out of 5, 10 out of 10. It's brilliant. Wow. Really good.
I have been wanting to watch it, so I will watch it. I've just finished The Boys, which I know is bad because I've only just caught up on that, which is absolutely out of this world. I'd recommend that to anyone as well. The Boys is just so
completely
good.
Completely agree.
So good.
Yeah. If you'd like The Boys, you're going to like this 100%.
Definitely. So, yeah, no, I will watch that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting when you do watch it to get just to see how you feel about it. It's just, I know you'll like it. Knowing you as I do, I really think you'll like it. It's so exciting.
Well, the thing is, I like anime anyway. So anything that's like that, and Rav sort of recommended it to us, didn't he? Said about watching it. And he doesn't generally steer you wrong when it comes to anime stuff. So it looks like he's picked out another cracker, because especially if you've enjoyed it as well. So definitely.
And another thing, the Army of the Dead, which is now on Netflix to watch, which looks really, really good. I mean, it's got a good cast in it, really. Dave Bautista heads it, and it's about the kind of 2 million bounty when they go into like a zombie apocalypse world.
Crazy.
So, and that was another thing that Rav mentioned, which is coming out and sent us a trailer for. So, and if we've got nothing else that's coming up onto review, it'd be really well worth just having a look at that and just seeing what that's like.
I definitely want to review that at some point because I think it'll be really good. It might be absolutely awful, but it looks good from what I've seen so far. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, and I think what would be nice is to do a film that is brand new that people may not have seen, and that definitely for sure that we haven't seen, and we'll both be going into it fresh and getting our points of view on the podcast live for the first time without each other knowing what we're going to think about it. And I always think that's entertaining when you do that.
Definitely.
One could go one way, the other one could go four on the other way. So
set up a date, young man, and we will do that because I want to do it. I want to watch it and I want to see what you think. So
definitely. Well, that's the podcast. I mean, we've got so many other films which we've done, and we've got there's loads. I've I don't know, 130, 140 different reviews. They're on iTunes, they're on Android. Everything now is on the YouTube channel, the Film Reel Cast. There's definitely something for everyone. There's no adverts. It doesn't cost. It's all free. And it's all really, really entertaining. If we're not doing Terminator 3 next week, I can foresee that we'll do Netflix Army of the Dead. And we'll have that out. And that'll be out next week without a doubt if we're not doing Terminator. But it is a film every week. When Loki starts, we're going to be doing Loki as well. Oh, so yes. Again, we'll be back to two podcasts a week. Two podcasts, folks. Free, advert-free, and always entertaining. So it's been really, really good talking about this film. And I'm glad I watched it because I haven't seen it for a long time. I now know that I can rest without having to see it again for the rest of my life.
Rest in peace.
Definitely. Well, it's been great doing this. I hope you enjoy it. Check us out. Leave us a review on iTunes. And that way you can spread the word and let other people know about this podcast. But Neil, I will speak to you very soon. And thanks very much, mate.
Take care, guys, and take care, Stu. Just for me. Oh, yeah. She says love.